May 21, 2021, it's the Wild for Pete Rose Show. Watch for Pedro Show. Happy Friday. Well, we start off the show with John Coltrane doing Love Thy Neighbor. 1958 from his prestige days, huh? He quit dope that year. No, he quit dope the year before. I was born that year. So this is like, some Thelonious Monk. I think he did 9 months with him after Miles socked him in the gut after a gig for Nod. Anyway, after that was Andrew Lesman. Anadon, I think is how you pronounce it. And, brother, you know, the show just turned 20 years, right, on the 19th. Didn't have a show, but that was Wednesday. And really missing Brother Matt because I did the first one with him 20 years ago, but it was a situation and stuff, thinking of him big time. But I'm not totally man alone because of those software engineers in Estonia with the Skype invention. I got Brother Andrew Lesman with me. Welcome aboard, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
20 years.
Big respect to Howard for making the connect. Thank you, Brother Howard Wolfen.
Yeah, thanks, Howard.
Yeah, absolutely. And, well, I want to talk about your journey through music. I know a little bit. I did some research. You weren't always a stick man with the beat in the hand. You also fucking slung the bone. Some bass.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, let you tell. Andrew, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, it would have been with my dad, who still is a sax player down in San Diego. So there's definitely some music memories that are deep down that I can't remember from when I was really small.
Yeah.
Now he would take me to the recording studio when I was a baby. But probably the last thing I can remember is sitting on his lap at the keyboard, and he would play tunes on the piano and sing and, like, teach me the lyrics and stuff. And I remember we did, Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square a lot.
Oh, yeah. So there's a piano in the pad you grew up.
Yeah, so, you know, it was kind of by osmosis, really, just, you know, getting the jazz music in my ears. He was a jazz guy, you know.
Sure. But did you jump on that piano yourself, man alone?
A little bit. I never had any lessons, though.
You didn't have to go through that, you know, the people I've had on the show, some that's almost made them quit music, that experience.
Yeah, luckily I loved the piano because of that. I never had that. You know, strict piano teacher. I just kind of fucked around myself and figured it out. But that was kind of the nice thing about, you know, growing up with it, is that it was all very informal, you know.
Casual.
His music friends would be around the house, and, you know, sometimes I'd come and play around and they'd show me stuff.
Let me ask you about school. Like, were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
I did marching band.
That's
in
probably where the bone came from, right?
The bone was in middle school. There was like a wind ensemble in like seventh grade or so. And I wanted to play sax. They had enough sax players already, so they put me on the trombone. And I was like, okay. and I hated it. I hated it the whole time. Like, was
Can I ask why?
Practice.
Can I ask why?
Why I hated the trombone?
Yeah.
I think I just thought the sax was cooler, and
well, of course you're popping it.
Trombone was like I had to like make farting sounds with my lips, you know. And
that's right. People don't realize that with the brass instruments.
Yeah.
A lot of it's coming off the lip. It ain't just working buttons like the other instruments.
Yeah, I guess the technique of it it never clicked with me, and no disrespect at all to the brass players, of course.
Music is music, right? We need guys on all the fucking trips to make a big symphony.
Yeah,
Listener question. What was the first record you bought with your own money?
Dookie by Green Day.
Okay. And what was the first gig you went and saw?
I've been around my dad's gigs a lot.
That's right.
But the first, like, show that, like, I went to when I was getting into music for myself Would have been Warped Tour in like 2001, I think.
So 85, 95 bands. Yeah. All playing at the same time. Like, you got to stand in front of cats you really like because the what do you call it? The overlap, the pollution. Interesting. Now, this thing about, like, you love music because, you know, you're growing up in a house full of it, but you don't like the bone. So what's your next plan? Try to find an instrument you do like.
Yeah. So after a year of the bone, I switched to snare drum. There was a music store in town that would do all the rentals, and they let me do snare drum instead. And I guess that would be eighth grade. And I didn't, you know, get on drum set for another couple of years, I guess, but, you know, that I had a good time, you know, learning the foundation, learning how to hold the sticks and all that
stuff. Yeah, let me ask you about that, because, you know, the field drum shit, you're slinging it, right? So there's that kind of traditional grip versus rock and rollers with match grip.
Yeah. Now I play traditional grip more, but at the time it was all match grip.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I don't know if the listeners know that, but by you slinging it, it's on the side there. It's hard to kind of do match grip. It makes perfect sense why that traditional grip came about.
The marching manufacturers, they changed it up and made a harness.
So so it'd be in front of you instead of on the side, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So, what about ends of the stick? Because Bill Bateman on the Blasters, now he would do traditional, but one side he'd do pointy side, the other side the fat side.
Yeah, I mean, I do.
To compensate, you know, like some kind of compensating.
Backbeat a lot of the time, not when I'm playing jazz stuff, but, you know, when I'm doing backbeat stuff. Okay. Using the butt end.
Okay, so now you're on snare drum for a while, right? You don't move to the contraption, the trap set, until when?
I think I was 12 when I first got a kit, yeah.
And how'd you get that kit? Because that's a big chunk of change for a kid.
Yeah, it was a gift from my pops, and it cost, you know, it was a cheap one. It was like $200, $300 maybe. It was like a Hohner kit.
Wow, and like the Beatle bass.
Oh, yeah.
That's Hofner. Hohner is the harmonicas.
Okay. Harmonicas, yeah, exactly. You know, so you can imagine, like, the quality of the kit, you know, feel as harmonicas.
But they probably jobbed it out to Randall or something. Rogers, that's good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you got a whole fucking kit. So where do you practice this thing? In your bedroom?
At my mom's house, we were in the Midwest, so we had basements and,
And usually that's where, you know, I'm not talking after school, like graduate, but in the afternoon when you do the basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band, all the guys meet up at the drummer's pad, right? Cause he's got to set up and tear down.
Yeah. When I was in the Midwest, it was in the basement and, you know, I only knew one guy who played music at school, and he played guitar, and we learned Nirvana songs and stuff like that, played, like, some little shows at, like...
You did do gigs. Did you do any of your own songs ever?
I didn't start writing until, I guess I was, like, 17, 18.
Yeah.
And I didn't really perform it all that much either.
Okay. So it was mainly, like, a practice band, but fuck, you need to do that. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You still in touch with this guy? Because he's kind of important. He was the only guy in fucking town. What town was this?
Yeah, I actually, we lost touch for a while, but I was on tour with a band a few years back, and when we went through Chicago, I got back in touch with him after, like, must have been 10 years or something, and we hung out, and it was great.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better than getting a fucking message via fake look.
Yeah.
Okay, look, I want to play Waterfront Lookout.
culture mistook migration for war, claimed the birds were gesticulating at him as they flew in formation. He'd seen it all before, knew the flight patterns, accused countries of wedging into countries like doorstops. "Don't let them touch ground," he whispered, leaning like a barrier in the doorway, waiting to see who would pass. The birds cursed at a runway they feared to land. No one dammed the tide as it came and went beneath their wingspan, nor commented on the dinghies as they sunk. Songs became cries, became murmurations, became silence. And then there was me, standing dead centre, stretching my arms like a bridge, waiting for someone to cross, holding back the urge to draw two lines in the sand that started from the same origin. I've never seen a sick one run out of sky.
Immigration and whatever through the
Y for Pedro show. That chunk of music started out with Andrew Lesman doing Waterfront Lookout. Pedro feel. Just hobbling by there, they're smart. Chris Butler after that brand new beautiful tale at Ohio. Akron or Cleveland? I always mix them up. He moves between the both. Sarah Oswald and Felder Melder, brand new. Fishes and Histogram Waterfalls. That's a title. Sophie Sparham, Christopher Gregory out of Derby, England with Verses, or V, parentheses, Verses. Ballerina Nun from Bombas Brandon, SLWCC Watt, Iowa City Band collab that I'm involved with. Droops, his buddy, Sam's buddy, Bob Bucko, in the Mirrored Ones after that with Stars out of Dubuque. Deep in the Woods, 66, from Dublin, Ireland, Tommy O'Sullivan, brand new album. It's the End of the Fucking World is the tune. And Big Bone Jim from David Dominique, which has got a Andrew Lesman, Lesman Connect, I know, because I got the music from him. Okay, so, yeah, you do your time in Elgin, in the basement there. Wood, a lot of it's woodshed, right? Now, did you have a teacher? Were you taking teacher drummer lessons?
I did, yeah. I took drum lessons out of a music store in Elgin, and he probably... now that I look back, I mean, he was into like some of the same music that I was getting into, you know, alternative rock stuff. So I was learning a lot of songs mostly. His technique, honestly, was not very good, but I was learning a lot of songs.
So the idea of like learning forms, like here's a bridge, here's a chorus, here's the intro and outro, that kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah, you know, just like a small room, you know, with the drum kit, and I would play along to like, you know, the stereo, you know, just playing along to these records.
Right, right, but I mean, learning forms, I think, is a little bit important. It's that, I mean, the obviously the main goal is to try to find your own fucking sound, right? But a good teacher will help you with that. But would you say, looking back now, it was a positive experience?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that was pretty early on. I got a much better teacher when I moved to San Diego when I was 13.
Okay, what's the difference?
Well, difference being, you know, I was living with my dad. My parents were kind of like split up. So in Illinois, I was with my mom, and there's not really any musicians on that side of the family. So, you know, I was kind of taking whatever I could get in Elgin. But I go to San Diego, and, you know, my dad's got all these buddies, so he hooked me up with a great teacher, Duncan Moore, down in San Diego.
Right, because he's got the connects with fucking probably incredible stickmen.
Yeah, so that was, like, really what kick-started my little journey with the drums was, you know, meeting him and going out to see music all the time.
And, oh, like he'd do suggests on you, right? Hey, check this out, check that out.
Oh yeah, I got so much music from him. He gave me like a couple gig hard drive, which was like insanely big at the time, with just a bunch of records on it. which I probably shouldn't say piracy, but you know.
No, but what he was saying, learn by listening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And he would do, you know, crazy like technique stuff on me. He would have me play these snare drum exercises, pad exercises. He would go behind me and like put his stick under my elbow and like, you know, move my arm around just to get me loose. Stuff like,
wow. What do we call that stuff? Rudiments, right?
Yeah, I was getting into the rudiments.
I think those are important, right? Because that's how you start building up vocabulary, to find your own voice.
Mm. And, you know, learning, studying guys like, you know, Steve Gadd. He was a big Gadd.
Steve Gadd, oh my God. A pretty good sense of time with that cat.
Yeah.
Time, isn't that a tough thing? That's how, especially playing with other people, right? So what about that? Do you know, besides your learning with this drum teacher shit, do you do the little side band with people your own age?
Yeah, definitely. at that point, I was kind of getting like equally into punk rock and jazz at the same time, which was kind of weird. I had a punk rock band at the time, and we were playing around doing.
I don't think it's weird. I think.
Well, actually, yeah, it's great to talk.
Yeah,
to you.
I think the average guy might say it's weird, but somebody who's been around a little bit, I don't think it's weird at all.
Totally.
So I think you were on the right fucking trail there, Andrew.
Yeah. It was very separate at the time, though. I didn't start mixing them yet, you know? So I had like a full, you know, punk rock band. And then I was also getting into jazz at the same time. And, I had a couple good friends. They actually still play together. These guys, the Mattson Two. They're like twin brothers who played kind of alt jazz stuff. But we were all hanging out, you know, a lot in like 10th, 11th grade, getting into music, you know, we were talking a little bit about Tortoise. We were both really into them a lot, and also like more straight ahead jazz. And we started playing a lot of gigs around town. I got this hotel, like lobby. All of us kind of did. Like, it was hard to tell who was kind of the leader of that one. I think the twins got it first.
You're talking hotel lobby gig.
Yeah, we had this gig at like a Marriott for like 2 years. I'm pretty sure the twins got it, and then when they got busy, they foisted it onto me, and then I roped in some other people, and it was kind of a rotating door thing. But I think it was weekly, so you know, it was a great learning experience to play all the time.
And basically, it was like to fill up time. You'd play like huge blocks.
Yeah, it, you know, all standards. We would play all, like, standard tunes.
But what I'm trying to say, it ain't like a club gig. It's more like a, I don't want to say lounge, but.
Lounge, yeah, like people talking over us. You know? The chatter was louder than the music, so I got really used to being ignored. But, you know, there's kind of, like, some freedom to me when you're being completely ignored. You have to, like, kind of toe a line between not playing too crazy that people get mad, but like kind of creating a nice vibe so they can ignore you and have enjoy their own company or whatever.
You'd be interesting wallpaper.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's a trip. But anyway, my deep down philosophy is whenever you play, you're fucking investing time in playing the next time. So it's never wasted.
Yes. No, I never felt like that was wasted time at all. We would find creative ways to challenge ourselves, and it was honestly a lot of fun.
And you know, you were saying standards. So did you develop like fake book kind of things to remember the forms and shit like that?
Yeah, we would play out of the fake book. I mean, for me, I guess it's easier for a drummer to say, but I really don't like having a page in front of me. So a lot of the tunes we played, I would just get them in my ears as soon as I could, or, you know, like learn the form like you were talking about, you know, is this AAB, you know, 32 bar or whatever.
Yeah.
And then just really, you know, focus on having the listening connection. I feel like the page kind of gets in the way of that.
Yeah, of course. And those things are just kind of like brief summaries, right? It's not like manuscripts.
Right.
It's just something, you know, especially if you know, a repertoire of like 500 tunes, you might need a little help, a little mnemonic device or something like that. Look, we're at the end of the first hour of the May 21, 2021 edition of Watford Pedro Show. Special guest, Andrew Lessman. Hold tight for hour two. May 21, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watford Pedro Show.
por la sala 22.
Thank you.
Stay still, 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 st
Pedro show. We start off the second hour with Laura Chihaya. I hope I didn't fuck that up. Laura Chihaya Trio?
I think you got it. Okay. Yeah.
And is this the Ornette Coleman song, Lonely Woman?
It is, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a cover.
So it's a cover, yeah. But, you know, anytime, like Ornette would do, you interpret it, reinterpret. So yeah. Joe Baez does a great version of Lonely Woman.
Mm.
Yeah, several different ones. You know, it depends who you're playing with, right? Clock yeah. After that with Miserloo. That's been done buttloads of time, but not like this. This kind of Eastern Europe. Chicha Libre after that. Well, that's bassman Jason Lafarge from Caesar's Palace in Brooklyn with Tres Pasajeros. Pasajeros. Scoozy. Trooper from Poland with Influence. Earl Slicky was on the show yesterday. Gary and Jake. It's like from his first recordings. Then he switched over from the drums to the guitar. So he made a record right away. Why not? Fuck it. If you can play drums, you can play anything, people. That I shouldn't. If I was made Fuhrer or some bullshit like that, you couldn't graduate school unless you learned the drums. And then you got to do a year traveling after high school. Those would be my two requirements. And then finally, the wedding present. Flying saucer. Is this the wedding present from England?
It is, yeah.
I played with them or shared a bill with Firehose like year in maybe late 80s.
Oh, wow, cool. Yeah, they've been around for a while. Yeah. That one, I debated whether to include that one or not because it's unreleased. And, you know, I don't know if they'd approve, but I'm not going to ever have a chance to show that to anybody. They came out here and they needed like a drummer for a couple of gigs. And we did this recording session here in LA. And we did like a few songs that they were kind of working on, like new material.
Yeah.
And then this one, which is like, you know, an older jam that they play a lot. And the other ones were like a little bit messy. So I'm sure they don't want that.
You're trying to show people the different things you've done. I think it was cool to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I gotta show my rock and roll cred.
Yeah,
like
right. That's it. The other thing is, actually, we're going to play that next chunk of music. I fucking read the playlist wrong. Yeah, after Chicha Libre was Matt Nelson with If You Get Bit, Just Hate the Bite. And this is a bass man out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Interesting cat. And Alexander Noyce. That's what you gave me. On the Fond du Lac. Sounds like a little Quebecois, huh? So, Alexander Noyce, how'd that connect happen?
We've known each other for a long, long time. We both came in at CalArts at the same time back in 2005.
Okay, we should talk about that. So, from San Diego, you do some institutional musical learning by going to CalArts.
Yeah, yeah.
And what made you pick that school? I know several music cats who have because it's a good choice, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I only applied to two different schools. It was either that one or the new school in New York. And the reason I checked out CalArts was because of Wadada Leo Smith.
Yeah, great.
I met him down in San Diego at this UCSD jazz camp.
Aztecs. That would happen. Aztecs. And I got to tell you, people, Mr. Smith is a trumpet man. It just shows you music is music. You know what I mean? You can go across this phony genre shit. You can go across this, well, yeah, I'm on the bone. No, I'm on the drum set. No, I'm on the trumpet. It's all music, people. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, he really got me thinking about music in a different way.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
And it was really fortunate because, you know, some people, you know, I think there was a tuition to go to this jazz camp, but my teacher Duncan Moore, who I told you about before, he was a kind of an adjunct teacher there, so he just kind of got me in like off the books, and because of that, I didn't get a lesson with any of the drummers that were there. They gave me a lesson with Wadada, you know, this trumpet player composer guy. Yeah. Which I thought was random at the time, but it was amazing. He just sat at the piano and we played a little bit and he would tell me very strange, like cryptic things that I didn't understand.
Like Cohen's.
Yeah. He left me with stuff that I like spent years kind of thinking about. And so, you know, I when it was college time, I tracked him down up there and I went and visited and, you know, went by his office to say, hey, what's up? And he remembered me and was like, yeah, come by anytime. So, yeah, that ended up being where I chose to go.
Fucking bitchin'. I want to play something you gave me from Matt Keevil called Light Depression.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. Each sun that was red shines as a nova. Every train we missed already gone by. Though she yet looks still, she's getting healthier. Though she yet is still, she's getting healthier. All you're saying is getting real. All you're saying is getting real. All you're saying getting real. All you're saying is getting real. Most of life says powers of the oceans. Its pull has effect on behavior. One by one, your tears are just about this. Direct our moves and steps and choices. All you're saying is getting real. All you're saying, it's getting real. All you're saying is getting real. All you're saying is getting real. We'll send a sign for furthest land. We'll bend the path, we'll reach to the end. all you say. It's getting real, all you say. It's getting real, all you say. It's getting real, all you say. It's getting thank you.
Watt for Pedro show, that chunk of music, for sure, people, started with Matt Kibble doing Light Depression. And, of course, Andrew is long for the ride there. Or to aid in a bed, I should say. And Mickey Sanker after that via Jack Brewer with Superhuman Unknown, Troopa Troopa. Now, yeah, now we overlap with the other fucking mistakes. And so you already heard these ones, but yeah, Troopa Troopa, Eric Slayton, the wedding present. Okay, how many years were you at CalArts?
4 years.
Okay, oh, wow, because a lot of cats don't do it in four. Okay.
I did undergrad there, so, you know, most people go for master's, I think, which is 2 years, but...
Yeah, but some dudes, yeah, it's the 12-year, two-year program.
Yeah, I didn't make it to master status.
That's all right, you know, because in a way, life is a classroom. You never fucking graduate, buddy.
Nope.
That's the whole lesson of my third opera. But while you were there, were you part of some ensembles?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, some informal ensembles, some, you know, faculty ensembles. One group that really kind of stuck was Vinnie Golia, who I think you know.
Absolutely. I got to do, in fact, it was Henry Kaiser who made me do it, right? The Both Suites of John Coltrane, Meditations and Love Supreme. Yeah, John Hanrahan ended up being the drummer man. But I was like, fuck this. I love this guy's music. I ain't going to soil it. But Vinny was fucking, and Henry, and Wayne Pete, too, he ended up, the organ man, good friend of Nels Klein, recorded. And yeah, John, yeah. Actually, that music helped him quit drinking. An incredible drummer man. But so the Vinny, meeting Vinny and getting to play with him.
Yeah, I mean, that's we had a band that started as just a school ensemble, and, you know, we're still playing off and on today. I mean, hopefully we will again soon when shows are coming back, but, yeah, the Vinnie Golia Sextet started up there, and, yeah, we've been going on a decade at this point, put out a couple of records. One of them you have, but...
Was your first recording when you were up there at CalArts or before?
Yeah, probably would have been up there. Yeah, definitely.
Because they have recording facilities right on the campus, right?
Yeah, they got a recording studio there. That's one thing that I never really got deep into that I wish I had big time is learning how to engineer. Because they just had that you could sign out and, you know, fuck around behind the board. But I spent a lot of time recording stuff up there.
I'm a big proponent. I mean, in the old days, there was a Grand Canyon between the guy, you know, Rudy Van Gelder, John Coltrane, right? But I think because of the way equipment is now, musicians can record themselves.
Yeah, I mean, those couple of tracks you played of mine, you know, earlier are... kind of a result of me not really learning the right ways to do it. And
learning your way.
Do it, yeah, you know, a very lo-fi way. You know, with a lot of, like, iPhone mic instead of real microphones. So.
Yeah, but, man, I can imagine the first time you're on a skateboard, you probably weren't fucking pulling ollies.
No.
You know what I mean? So, but just to go out there and dare to do, I'm trying to encourage more and more, especially this last 14 months of situation, right?
Yeah. You know, I think you can get a lot of cool sounds not worrying too much about the gear and, you know, just using those limitations to, you know, kind of inspire some creativity, you know, in its own weird way.
Yeah. Well, expression is expression, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's like, you know, those tracks are sort of my version of jamming Econo, right?
It's not just a slogan, it's a way of life.
Yeah.
Your kindred spirit, Andrew. Well, look, we're at the end of the second hour, May 21, 2021, Dish Watt Peter Show. Special guest, Andrew Lessman. Hold tight for hour three. May 21, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt for Peter Show. Thank you.
Wow.
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the third hour. The Vinnie Goliath sextet with Dr. Xavier. Excuse me. I guess only women have them. Not those. We have them too? I guess question mark. Interrogative. Okay. Then we had Lucas Abella from Sydney. E is for eczema. Morgan Delt after that, Little Zombies. And then, I think this is your current proj, Teethers.
Yep.
Goose Chasing. And, so, tell me about Teethers.
Well, there's definitely some crossover with the other projects. You played some Alex Noyce music earlier. He's the guitar player in Teethers. And, this is like a bunch of music that I've been writing over the years. Some Goose Chasing is one of the first things I wrote, so that's like a pretty old piece. And I finally, you know, got around to getting my own band together and recording it. So this is going to be an ongoing project.
So, Teethers, you're the shot caller.
Yeah, it's all
great,
my
great
stuff.
Chico Hamilton, right? Gabor Szabo's in my band. I'm not in Gabor Szabo's band. He lived in Pedro a little while with Gabor Szabo. George Hurley got way into Chico. You know, Chico Hamilton had a real rough time trying to get songwriting credit.
Did he?
Yeah, the publishers, right? So, drummers can't write because the notes, I guess, last too short. So, Goose Chasing. Okay, when you're composing music, what's the first thing? Are you thinking rhythms or melodies?
Melodies. For all this stuff that I write for my band, it's written mostly at the piano. One of them I wrote on guitar, but mostly on the piano. And the drums are the last thing that I figure out. So.
And for the band members, do you create demos?
Usually I do. I think for Goose Chasing, that's just written on, you know, pen on paper. But there's some other stuff that's a little bit more intricate that I do make demos for, yeah.
And then Alexander, he hears this shit, and are they like sketches for him, you know, like lines on the road, like boundaries, or so he can improvise, or does... Is he pretty strict about following your
direction? It depends. It depends on how specific I am. I like to keep things kind of open to interpretation, but, you know, there are definitely lines on the road that I must enforce.
Probably for sure the statements, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that melody actually is, I think I had to sing it to them a bunch because it doesn't really fit on paper and it's very loose with the time.
Yeah.
So it took actually a while to get that melody the way I heard it in my head. So yeah, I would sing it to them.
Well, you know what Mr. Wells said? No wine before it's time.
Okay.
So if it takes a couple... 1,000 chance, then you got to do that, you know.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's why it took me kind of a while to get this project going, because
sure,
I'm a little bit, you know, anal, not about like the technical details, but, you know, to kind of correctly represent, you know, things the way that I hear it. And, you know, all the guys who played on the album with me, I've been playing with for a really long time. So if we had just kind of gotten it thrown together, you know, when, you know, with some studio cats or something like that, it wouldn't work. So there's something really special about having that communication with, like, you know, people who I hang with all the time, you know, let alone have played music a lot with.
Right. And for example, this next tune, Love Poem.
Mm.
Describe that process. Since you know, Goose Chasing goes way back, but you probably wrote, I don't know when Love Poem came in.
Yeah, this one's a little bit newer. Okay. And that's the one I wrote on guitar, and that kind of made me, you know, think of chords in a different way. So it's got, you know, a different character than a lot of the other more thorny kind of stuff. But Yeah, this, I mean, this one is really just a tone poem. I don't know what else to say about it.
We don't have to say anything. We can play it for the people. Let them listen.
Yeah. Thank you.
Watt for Pivo Show, last music for this edition. Love Poem from Teeters. After that, live performance, End Times 10, or X, can't tell if it's a Roman numeral, or 2019, Ikue Mori, and Charmaine Lee. Ikue Mori, she was drummer lady for DNA. I saw maybe 1981 or 80 at the Hong Kong Cafe, Chinatown here. And then finally, Monopoly on Violence / Mushroom Dance, Teethers. Okay, so where was this album recorded?
It was recorded in my house.
Great, man. It sounds fucking bitchin'.
Yeah, homemade.
See, it just shows to go, yeah, I think the equipment's made like fucking buttloads of progress.
Yeah, it's not my equipment, but a roommate of mine has he built a home studio here, and yeah, he got it sounding pretty good, and that was nice to record at home because I'm pretty lazy and I don't like moving my drum gear all around.
And like, how long was the process?
We tracked the drums, bass, and guitar all together. I think in one session, maybe it was 2 days back to back.
Now, there was prac ahead of this time, though, right?
Yeah, we did some practice before that, yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Well, some people, well, I guess at your own pad, it's not as bad, but dudes who book $1,500 a day studio time to do prac, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, those days are gone, thank God. Like, my heart bleeds pink lemonade for those motherfuckers. Going back to the recording, would you call it self-produced?
Well, I mean, I didn't produce it all myself, but I had a couple friends help
me. Okay, well, you know, my mind reading skills ain't that good yet, Andrew, but I'll get there.
So my friend Chris, he's the one who recorded it here in the house. And then to mix it, I hung with my good friend Billy Womo, who's a great producer and songwriter that I play with in his band. And he was down hang with me and just like mix this. So we had a few, you know, pretty long days fucking around in Logic and, you know, making interesting mixing choices. He's got a pretty interesting approach to mixing. He's not a jazz guy at all. So that's kind of what I wanted was a.
No, but you got to barter some skills, right? You help him out with some drumming, and he helps you out with some mixing.
Yeah, it was a barter situation.
No, but
sure.
I think that's beautiful, man. When musicians do that kind of shit for each other, to me, that's where fucking things are happening. Cooking with gas.
Yeah. I don't really like depending on people that I don't know that I have to pay a bunch of money to. It's like, not that I don't respect musicians enough to pay them. I do. But, you know, you come out with something more personal if it's your friends that you're working with.
Yeah, I can relate. And look, where can people find you on the internet?
This stuff is all streaming, so you know you can look up Andrew Lessman Teethers on wherever.
No, what I'm asking is there an Andrew Lessman website?
Oh, there is. Yeah, it's andrewlessmanmusic.com.
Okay, people, andrewlessman.com. And from there, you probably got links to all the other shit, right?
Yeah. It's all there.
Okay, because it's important, man. You got to check out this cat's music. I really dig what you're doing. Do you have plans for another one?
Yeah. I just started recording the next one at my buddy Evan Taylor's studio in downtown L.A. He just built this place out. It's got tons of, like, analog synth gear. It's like a little playhouse. So we got in there just a couple of weeks ago and put down a track.
You're telling me you're rocking some synthesizer?
I played some Juno on this.
Okay. I mean, I've heard of drummer men triggering synths with drums. They don't always have to use a keyboard, right?
No, I mean, I do that too. I do some triggering. I that's, you know, another thing that I learned out of necessity, you know, a lot of bands.
Like some hair metal butt bands, butt rock bands.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to get all those butt rock
bands. When you get this next record done, will you come back on the show and we can play it and talk about it?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I'd love to.
Okay. Man, I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to hear it. Thanks so much for being on the show. Big honor for me.
Hey, thanks, man. It's an honor to be with you.
Okay, keep on keeping on, brother. People, it's been May 21, 2021 edition of Locke Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.